Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie, a mom to a Mito fighter. On our podcast, Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and I'm glad you're here to learn and to be part of our community. Hi, Daniela. Welcome to our podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us. I know being in Europe, you are a few hours ahead of us. So we're recording this in the middle of the day here in Minnesota. So I'm guessing you're about, what, 7 hours?
Yeah, exactly. It's 8-something p.m. here.
And do you live in Switzerland?
I live in Switzerland, exactly.
Wow. Okay. Wow, this is so exciting. So do you mind telling our listeners about your diagnosis and how your journey has been with mitochondrial disease?
Of course. I have KSS, Kearns-Sayre syndrome. I was diagnosed only 4 years ago at the age of 31. I actually started showing symptoms when I was 12 years old, more or less. And my only symptom was a droopy eyelid. But it was so droopy that at a certain point I could not open that eye anymore. I saw many specialists in 2 different countries, actually, because I'm Uruguayan and I'm Italian. And I lived my childhood in Uruguay and then my teenage years in Italy. And as a child, I saw many specialists in Uruguay. And then when I moved to Italy, I also saw another bunch there. And they couldn't understand what I had. They would just say that it's just a droopy eyelid, that potentially some muscles did not develop well or something like that. This, of course, after considering I had myasthenia gravis, because we always get misdiagnosed with something, right? I did take, however, the medication for myasthenia, and I was not responding at all to that, because clearly it wasn't that. And so doctor said, okay, that's the only thing that seems off, your eyelid. Everything else was okay. My MRI, so the other tests they did, they were clean. So for them, it was clearly just no biggie, something probably not important at all. But my parents didn't give up. I mean, they kept on looking for an explanation. This is why in Italy, they also took me to other huge amount, actually, of specialists. And exactly the same story. Well, apparently there's nothing, you know, even though I started by then in as a teenager, I started showing strabismus signs. So it was clear that it was not just the eyelid, also my eye was starting to be deviated and everything. And they were like, yeah, this is probably all part of the same issue. So I said, okay, that it probably, you know, it's just that. And then at 31 years old, I had just an eye infection. And I went to the hospital, and we have a specialized ophthalmic hospital here. So I just went there and to check my infection, just to see what I could do for my eye. And just before leaving, the ophthalmologist asked me to follow the finger and see if my eyes would move. And I could see him insisting so much on this. And really, like, saying, he kept on saying, yeah, but look at my eye. And I was like, I'm looking at your eye. And so he then asked me, since when your eyes don't move? Since when you don't have eye movement? And it caught me completely off guard, because I had no idea I had no ocular movement. And that's what actually started the whole process for me, because the fact that I didn't have eye movement, that was an ophthalmoplegia. And they sent me to another specialist there, and it was actually an ophthalmologist. Really, few months after this visit that I did, she really looked at me and said, I don't know how to tell you this, but I really believe that what you have is a mitochondrial disease that is called CPO, chronic progressive external ophthalmoplegia. But we need to run some tests and to do a lot of checks and see if this is actually the case. So from then on, I saw a bunch of people, because after seeing the ophthalmologist, I saw the neuro-ophthalmologist, then the neurologist, then the metabolic expert. I was lucky in a way, because I know so many mitochondrial patients without a clear diagnosis, but they did a muscle biopsy and they did a DNA test, and it came positive for mito. I think it's the most common deletion on mitochondrial diseases. That is the 5KB large deletion in the mitochondrial DNA. And they just said, okay, yeah, it's confirmed. You have CPO/KSS. because I have pigmentation in my retina, so it's most likely to be keratitis syndrome. It took, what, 19 years? Yeah.
19 years. I think you hold the record right now for on all of my interviews for the length of diagnosis.
Oh, I feel glad.
I'll send you your crown later.
Thank you.
When you said they did a muscle biopsy, they didn't biopsy your eye, did they?
No. Even though this is a story that I kind of hate, but, you know, it shows a bit of how the medical world works in a way. So the person who actually could confirm that I had a mitochondrial disease was the neurologist. So the ophthalmologist was the one that suspected it. And the neurologist, he was the one that said, you have a mitochondrial disease. We just need to understand what's the type. And I was completely under shock. I remember I was crying in his office. And he thought it was funny to tell me that they were going to do the biopsy on my eye. And he was then like, no, I'm joking. What is there to joke about? You know, you just told a patient that she has a condition that it's chronic and progressive and she will never heal from this and everything. And you think it's fine to joke about it. So the muscle biopsy was done on my leg. It was done on my thigh.
Classic muscle biopsy. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving forward now you have your definitive diagnosis. In Europe, do they prescribe any type of medication? Do you take the mito cocktail?
So I do take the mito cocktail. In my case, it's actually just the coenzyme, the CoQ10, okay? But I personally take another, like just a mix of vitamins, things that you can buy at the supermarket easily, because I have the feeling that that actually helps, even though my mito specialist was just of the idea of going with the coenzyme. I felt like, you know, I needed something more, not just that. So this is why I take just a vitamin mix and the CoQ10. And I can tell you that Europe is very, very heterogeneous. It really depends on the country you are, how the mito cocktail work, or if doctors will prescribe it to you or not. I have the feeling here in Switzerland, at least, they are like kind of conscious, or, you know, like, since there are no like real scientific evidence that the mito cocktail can help everyone and etc., they would tend not to give you much.
Right. We've had doctors here refer to it as fairy dust, but we do know it works.
And there you go. At least let the patient try. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work, but you have to give them the possibility to check if that's the case. And here, I think they have like a very conservatory sort of approach when it comes to that. It goes, I think, a bit better in Italy, for instance, where I know that there are like not only CoQ10 prescribed, but also other things. But then, as I said, it really depends on the countries.
So do you have to travel consistently now for care, or do you have doctors right there in Switzerland you can see?
So that's something that also changes a lot in Europe. I'm lucky. Again, because I live in a city where we have a center that is a hospital, which is linked to the university. So there are all pretty much all kind of specialists, and there is this metabolic and genetics department. And I have the possibility to be follow up here in my same city. So it's easy for me. But I'm in touch with a lot of people from Italy, and I know there is not really straightforward because the centers are not everywhere. So you might have to travel, I don't know, you know, 7, 8 hours by car or whatever just to see a specialist. It's not easy.
No.
And the other thing is that maybe you have your mito specialist, but even then I had this very open talk to my mito specialist, which is the metabolic doctor. And at a certain point she told me, Daniela, you are going to be the expert when it comes to your disease, because you are much more in contact with the disease itself, of course, but also with other people with your same disease. While me as a doctor, I just see, you know, like literature or the patients that come here, that of course being a rare genetic disease, there are not that many. So on one side, of course, I appreciate the honesty, and I appreciate a doctor that can say, okay, maybe I will not be able to help you as much as, you know, other people would. It's not really reassuring when you just start learning about your disease. But yeah, that's a thing. And then the other thing in any case is that, you know, maybe you have your mito specialist, but then if you need another doctor for, you know, whatever GI issues or, you know, ENT doctor or whatever else that comes with mito, and we know that it can be many, many different things, then you might have to deal with doctors that have no idea what a mitochondrial disease is.
Right. Are they willing then to reach out to your specialist at the center to help?
Luckily, yes. I know this is why I say like I'm really lucky. If, you know, sometimes since I feel a bit like a citizen of the world because I've lived in Uruguay, I've lived in Italy, now I live in Switzerland, and sometimes, you know, I think Switzerland going to be, you know, like my destination, my final destination or not. I always think of the fact that here I am really lucky when it comes to my disease, at least, you know, and doctors dealing with everything. I think I'm very lucky. I have a cardiologist at the hospital who has some experience on mitochondrial patients, but he's like super busy, super scheduled, etc. So he was of the idea of like checking me once every 2 years. That for me, as a KSS patient, someone, you know, patients in which heart block can arise at any given point, thought it was a really bad idea. So I agreed about having an external cardiologist who does regular checkups on my heart. And if anything arises or if she has any doubts, she would just contact my mitochondrial specialist cardiologist.
Excellent.
So I think that's also great because I have people like willing to collaborate with each other, and it works well for me.
Yeah, that willingness to collaborate is, I feel like everybody in the mito world, that's our hurdle, is trying to find a team of doctors who aren't leery of sharing information or asking questions. So you are very lucky to have that piece.
I agree.
How does it work for you being a working parent with a rare disease in Switzerland?
Let's start by saying it's not easy. That's a given. I'm also a single mom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with two kids and mito. Again, I keep on saying that I'm lucky, but I know I am, and I'm not going to deny that because my kid's dad, we have a really good relationship, and we share custody. So kids stay 1 week with me, and they stay 1 week with him. And this helps a bit also for me to have the time to kind of recover in the week off and being like giving all that I have for them and with them when I am with them. When it comes to work, I work 50%. So that's also something useful and really helpful because I could not be working 100% anymore. It's impossible. Like my energies, the fatigue and everything, they wouldn't make it happen. So it's a good balance. I think I have found a good balance. And, you know, even if I work at 50%, I do, however, have appointments like every week. And at least once a week. I mean, I do physiotherapy twice a week just to start with. So,
wow.
Every Wednesday afternoon, my daughter, she's home from school because that's how the system works here in Switzerland. On Wednesday afternoon, she's at home with me. So, you know, even just like that, I get like 3 days a week in which actually my day is a full day. And then the other 2 days, I usually have something. So, I think it needs a lot of planning, a lot of listening to your body, really recovering when you need it. If you need to nap, you nap. If you need to cancel an appointment, you say sorry, but you cancel it. I mean, I'm sorry, I have canceled even physiotherapy, that it's useful for me, but sometimes if I feel like my body cannot make it, then it doesn't make sense to go there and collapse.
Right. That is like the underlying current that I just can't stress enough as a mito mom. My son has mito, that listen to your body and rest. When it says you're done, you have to acknowledge that and be done, because you're just only going into a deficit. Like you said, there's no point in going to an appointment and then collapsing.
Exactly.
Now, the big pressing question for me is I found you on Instagram.
Yes.
Just by whim. And I'm sure it's all of their algorithms on how you find people. And I am in awe of your bravery and your what we call grit, on how you just really lay it all out on social media what it's like to have this disease and to be a working mom. How did you come up with the idea to do that? And where did you get the bravery for that? Because you are very honest.
So first of all, thank you. I don't think it's really, I mean, you see it as bravery. I see it as my outlet. Truth is, when I just knew about my diagnosis, I felt like really lonely. Like it was something completely new. It was hard for my family or, you know, friends to understand it or even sometimes to give the right importance to things, you know. The idea of downplay it because they were scared, I understand it. But at the end of the day, I was left alone battling this disease. And this is how I came across on Facebook with CPO and KSS groups. And they were really, they were life-saving to me. I mean, they made me understand more about the disease. They reassure me about a lot of things because when, you know, all you know is that it's chronic, it's progressive, and you don't know how things are going to develop. Everything could happen or anything or nothing at all. You know, that's such a big question mark. And it gives you so much anxiety that having a very supportive network was essential. And one of the reasons why I started my Instagram account was simply because I wanted to share with people what it was like living with a mitochondrial disease, showing the ugly, but showing also like the positives, not of living with a mitochondrial disease, but living despite having mito.
Right.
And that was, you know, the main thing, just showing people that, okay, yeah, mito sucks because it really does. And I can show you a bunch of images and things that will show you and will tell you that it actually does. But there's always hope that we have to have. And there are always other things in life besides your disease that you have to keep in mind and, you know, just fight for that. I have my kids. They mean the world to me. And, you know, I cannot just focus on my disease and not consider that I have, you know, a beautiful family. That also, you know, my biological family, I don't know how to call it, you know, my parents and siblings, they are great and they're extremely supportive. And, you know, yeah, they might not know much about it or they might be afraid to learn too much about it, but they're of great support in any case.
I think you do a great job at showing that you're not just a case of mito. You're a person and you have all sorts of other things that make your world, and mito is just a piece of it.
It's there, exactly. I mean, it's a big piece, actually, and I'm not going to deny that. And it will rule many of my days, but I'm also a mom, I'm a woman, I'm a worker. There are so many other things besides that. And I just don't want people to feel alone when it comes to mito. And, you know, if me sharing what I go through and my appointments and all, you know, many different things, if that can help anyone out there just to learn a bit more or not to feel so lonely in this process, then I will keep on doing what I know on Instagram.
That is so selfless of you to look at it as a way of having outreach to help other people stay connected, because you're right. And especially with COVID right now, all of us just feel so isolated and so disconnected that social media has been, I mean, say what you will about it, it has its ugly side, but it is definitely a win for a lot of people.
No, it has, yeah, absolutely. And believe me, I don't feel like I'm doing this all selflessly. I think there's a selfish part of me that does it also, because this is also my outlet. This is my mito outlet, where, you know, you want to put things out just there and say, okay, I'm going through this and this and that. I don't want to be a burden to anyone specifically, so I just put it out there. It's like talking to the wind. If someone wants to listen, they will. If they don't want, they won't. But it's also helpful for me mentally, emotionally, just to put things out there. So I love the fact that you see it as selfless. I think there's also a bit of me leaning in a way to do that as well.
Well, I know you were a great advocate this last week for, it was Awareness Week, and you were able to get people at your work to wear ribbons, correct?
Yes.
That was amazing.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, and you, I think you also posted some pictures that there was some buildings in your community that lit up green.
Yeah, exactly. I asked the city of Lausanne to light. It's actually a big fountain that it's close to the lake shore, and then this other building structure that was light up in green. And this is the third year that they light up for me too, and for my too, and I'm so thankful and so glad. And the rainbows was just amazing because people were. I work in an ophthalmology clinic, so it's still, a medical environment, and seeing doctors, nurses, receptionists, everyone with a green ribbon, it was seriously touching. It was beautiful. And I got to know really a great story about one of our doctors, like the medical director of the clinic. He was wearing the green ribbon, and a patient asked about it. And so the doctor explained that it was for mitochondria disease. It was the awareness week because I left the bones and the ribbons within a bowl in a common area with a note explaining what it was about, etc., so that people knew why I was asking them to wear the green ribbons. And the patient asked the doctor if he could have the green ribbon. And the medical director, he just gave his green ribbon to the patient. And I was just like so happy about this. It's a little thing, but if it's, just touching someone.
No, but that's huge. It just that acknowledgement and just that support of your workplace, just wearing the ribbons and sharing that information, and that's what it's all about is Awareness Week, is we don't have enough awareness. So that's amazing.
And even today, yesterday and today, I went to work and people were still wearing the green ribbons. I told them, you can take them off now. It's fine. I'll give them to you next year again. Don't worry. But it was just lovely to see them. I have one colleague who told me, I'm not taking the ribbon off.
Wow.
People have asked me about mitochondrial diseases, so I'm keeping
Oh,
it.
that's wonderful.
I said, okay. He's like, great. I love you. Keep on doing it. Yeah, I'm so glad and thankful for the working environment in which I'm in.
Yeah. Did you work for an ophthalmology department before your diagnosis?
No, when I was diagnosed, I was doing my PhD in biology. So it came really in a hard moment.
Wow.
Yeah, and I finished my PhD. I was diagnosed in 2017, and I finished my PhD in 2019.
You are amazing. I did not know you had your PhD as well on top of everything else.
Yeah, I didn't, the sort of studies that I did kind of lead you to that. So,
That is, well, you really are just out, like you said, you wear many hats, and that is amazing that you've gone that far with your education on top of having a rare disease. Good for you. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Energy in Action. I am so honored to speak with one of my favorite social media influencers. So,
thank you so very much.
if everybody wants to know how to find you, what's your handle on Instagram?
It's the
The Mito Girl.
Mito Girl. Yeah, not very original, but it gives the idea of what's my account about.
It definitely does. So thank you again for being on our show, and I look forward to following you and watching your adventures continue.
Thank you so very much for having me here.
You're welcome. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Energy in Action. I really enjoyed meeting Danella. I'm so thankful she was willing to share her Mito journey with us from all the way across the pond. It's nice to know that globally we're all in this together, and we're all looking for ways to live and thrive. And I believe Danella shows as a really great example of that. So go check her out on Instagram. You can find her at The Mito Girl and give her a follow. She always has some great insight and just ways to really get in there and show Mito who's boss. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. That helps boost us up the charts. And be sure to join us next time for more All Things Mito. This is your host, Stephanie, Rare Mom Extraordinaire.